Live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
All right, here we go. 4 o'clock hour. It's brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the number in the north because we are in Reno, Northern Nevada. Dial 775-766-1400. Today, Friday, football Friday. We got bowl games being played right now. Big bowl slate tomorrow. But as we were just talking about, bowl games are not difficult to watch. But, man, in terms of the wagering, and we're here at the STN book at TI, makes it tough, man. And I think you said it last week, just to build on what we were talking about a couple minutes ago in the last block, that I think you're leaning in more towards betting in game, right, on a lot of these games, so kind of waiting to see if it becomes clear early who's in it, who's not in it.
Yeah, that's the only way you can do it at this point, just because of what you said and what Sammy said in the last segment. Like, we're probably going to see a lot of high-end players for the Nittany Lions not play tomorrow, and that number will skyrocket. By the way, it's apparently the biggest snowstorm to hit the tri-state in 3 years is going through there tonight.
Didn't it just snow like 10 days ago?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, but a lot of snow.
But it likely will be gone by game time, but who knows? I mean, who knows what that crowd was going to be?
Who's going to be there?
Exactly. Well,
you're talking Clemson, Penn State, and Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. And that was going to be a monster, probably almost like, I don't want to say home field, but there are going to be a ton of Penn State fans there because knowing that area, obviously. You and I probably only went to went to high school back in the day with, what, about 60 people that probably went to Penn State?
I don't know. I really don't want to remember. Bitter memories. Big Four time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents The Big Four at Four. Number four.
I wasn't trying to shoot down your comment. Thinking back, I probably wasn't friends with people who went there. So
oh, okay,
I wouldn't even
enough.
Have known that they'd gone there. Oh, yeah, they're going to Penn State? I don't know who that is. All right, NFL, the Big Four. Man, the Niners, I was wrong on this team. I predicted absolute disaster. I thought even when Purdy came back, they wouldn't be very good. They had all those wide receiver problems. They had two defensive players, or arguably the two best guys, Bosa and Fred Warner, go down early in the season. I thought under 10. I feel like I made a bet with someone on the show that it was under 10, or maybe I meant, I don't know. I thought I made a bet with someone, but I'm getting slaughtered on that one. Because they're on the way to, we think, the Niners to something really good. And that Bears game on Sunday night is massive for both teams. And I don't know about you. I don't have a lot of confidence the Bears are going to knock off the Niners.
No, I actually really like San Francisco in that game. Because, and it's funny because I love the Bears coming into this season. I felt like that no one liked them. Oh, Caleb Williams isn't that good. Ben, how much can Ben Johnson do in 1 year? And I was like, they're playing a last-place schedule in a division that I think is bound to regress, which both things have happened. Bears have been awesome in these close games. I mean, Chicago's won 5 games they've been trailing at the 2-minute warning this year. Like, that's impossible. That is absolutely impossible. And the Niners...
Yeah, I will definitely fade them next year.
Now, they're going to be playing a first-place schedule, too. But who knows? Williams might take another step forward, and Johnson might have been the brains in Detroit. I don't know if it's too soon to say that, but very well might have been at this point. But, boy, Kyle Shanahan has not gotten the respect for the job he's done this year because he had Mac Jones for more than half the season. He had Mac Jones looking very good to the point that I even said to you when Purdy came back, I'm like, are we sure this is an upgrade? Obviously, that was wrong because Purdy has been
one. Say that again. I remember when you were saying that. Remind the audience what you were saying.
No, that I was like, why are we even making the switch back? Like, Jones has been really good. Is Purdy really all that good? And Purdy's been spectacular since coming back.
Yeah, you're terrible at this.
Look, it happens.
But listen, I was the one who said the Niners would win less than 10 games. So.
But this is, Cofield, if the Niners, and I think they're going to win, and I think they're going to cover against the Bears, and then they host Seattle, who they already beat once this year in week 18. If they beat them again, they'll be the one seed. And with basically losing 70% of your defense through the year, including your best defensive players, Warner, Bosa, haven't been there at all since early in the year. I don't know how Kyle Shanahan isn't the coach of the year, especially when you take into account that they will have won the NFC West, which will have the second and third best teams by record in the NFC in the same division as them.
For the rest of the season and the playoffs with Purdy.
Yeah.
He's been playing really well, except for the stinker that you and I watched when every time we looked up, there was a turnover on both sides with Carolina.
They still won that game, though.
Do you trust him completely? Is he a top-5 quarterback in the game right now, the way he's playing?
The way he's playing, he's pretty darn close. I still always have my reservations at Purdy. I just... The turnover, happy games happen in the wrong spots. I mean, again, 2 years ago, he's the MVP favored by a ton and then had that five-turnover game against Baltimore at Christmas. So there are just the wrong time clunkers, which, look, if you're San Francisco, I guess you'd rather have that one of these next 2 weeks as opposed to in January, even if you lose the one seed because of it.
Number three. Are you with Sammy and worrying about the Seahawks against the Panthers?
I don't think they lose, but I'm a little bit floored with how Carolina's played at home since getting smacked by Buffalo, and that was Andy Dalton anyway. That wasn't Young. I'm a little bit floored that that thing is held at 7. Now, I'm not saying Carolina's going to win the game. They obviously beat Tampa last week, needed a bunch of help from the Bucs. They beat the Rams a few weeks ago in the game where Stafford threw multiple interceptions. But I think this is a tight game. I think Seattle's going to struggle. And at some point, they've just been so dominant going west to east in an early time window that at some point you have to imagine they're going to have a clunker mixed in there. And they're coming off the most miraculous win they've had all year on that Thursday night against the Rams.
Number two. Chargers smash the Texans tomorrow.
Yeah.
What does that do for you?
Nothing. Realistically speaking, it does nothing because the Texans' defense, as we've talked about on this show, is spectacular. But their offense stinks. And their offense is poorly put together. It is horribly schemed. Stroud has regressed since his rookie year, in part because of how bad the scheme was with two different coordinators, because we thought Slowick was the issue last year, and Callie's come in and has been worse than Slowick was in either year. It does really nothing because in the end, the Chargers have a mash unit on the offensive line. And how can you win? The path to the one seed, it would take a lot of good things in their favor happening. How are you winning three playoff games with that offensive line? So to me, it changes nothing.
On the way the offense runs, do you have a problem with the way D'Amico Ryan's head coaches the offense?
I have a problem with how he head coaches the team because he's too conservative. I mean, last week, they almost lost to the Raiders because of the conservative nature that they played the game with. I mean, he had 4th-and-3 and shorter 3 different times and took 3 50-yard field goals. Now, granted, they won the game by 2, but when you're playing a reasonable team, a playoff-caliber team, it's going to bite you when you're that conservative. And again, I don't know. Ryan's feels like a guy who is an unbelievable guy during the week. Unbelievable culture guy, great practice coach, all that noise. Everything with that, but when the game comes, I've never liked how he's managed games, even though he's won a division twice and is going to make the playoffs for a third time in 3 years, inheriting an absolute mess when he got there.
I'm looking at a quarterback on the Texans roster, 3-0 when he started. We'll check that, 3-1. The 3 wins, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. They weren't the greatest games ever. Is D'Amico Ryans being loyal to a fault in not considering Davis Mills into the lineup?
I don't know how you can justify that. Even though they won 3 games and they beat 2 playoff teams, but keep in mind one of those wins was Jacksonville's doing. Like, remember that? That was a 20-point game, and Jacksonville just stopped playing and blew that game. But look, why did they win that Buffalo game? They won that Buffalo game because they had Josh Allen not knowing what he was looking at. So if they're going to make a run in the playoffs, it's going to be because of the defense. But Stroud still can do more than Mills.
What are your CJ Stroud in?
This is year 3.
Okay.
Yeah, it's year 3. And Bryce Young's better than him right now.
Decision time's coming up.
Yeah. Soon. I mean, you're going to have to pick the option up for year 5. I mean, you're going to have to.
Right, but looking after around that, the league, yeah, and how many teams have fired on dudes for a 4 or 5 year deal with over $100 million guaranteed because they were the next one up at quarterback, I just wonder what the future is like for CJ Stroud.
I think they'll pay him. I'm not sure if they're right in doing it, but I think they'll pay him.
Top story.
Number one.
Well, the reason I asked the Chargers question, what did the what would a giant victory for the Chargers over the Texans do for you? For me, I ask because of the way they're playing defense, the physicality, and their line has held up okay. Should the Chargers be getting more respect in an AFC that doesn't really have a world beater at the top? Broncos yesterday take on the Chiefs. And again, like every Broncos game seems like it's freaking close. And of course, you go back a couple weeks and they got smashed at home by the Jaguars.
If we get Buffalo at Denver in a divisional round after Buffalo beats Pittsburgh and may not look overly impressive, and Denver's coming off the bye. That's going to be like one of the more fascinating games of the entire postseason, because I'm just curious what the folks behind the counter do with that. I don't buy Denver at all. And it's just amazing luck this year in tight games. I don't buy New England either, because their schedule has been such a joke. But then you look up, I mean, they're basically two touchdown favorites. By the way, I'm against Sammy P and Felica. I laid the lumber with New England. I think the Jets are just completely so dead at this point, and they're starting a guy who shouldn't be playing in the NFL. I mean, again.
You're doing a Friday show here at Treasure Island, which is a lovely place, and you're doing it with me. Felica is in Turks and Caicos. So,
my
vacation might be cut short if the Jets kept blowing off the field.
But the last
2 days were canceled. We got to get back home.
But I'll just say this, Cofield. I just go back to what I've been saying to you for the last 6 weeks. And I'm just worried that the Jaguars have peaked too early.
Say it the right way. Just say it.
The Jaguars are winning the AFC. That's what I'm going.
I was asking for you to be a weirdo like Liam Cohen.
No, Duval. There you go. But they are. Cohen is awesome. Lawrence is playing by far the best football of his career. And that defense, despite the fact that a lot of people decided they can't play and they are only because of the turnovers, they're any good. Your defense was awesome last week against Denver. So I think that's the team. Now, the one thing that concerns me with Jacksonville, there is a real path that Buffalo and Jacksonville play each other wild card weekend. I do not like that draw, especially when Buffalo is going to sit their guys in Week 18 against the Jets, and Allen's going to be well rested.
We started talking about this a few weeks ago. What's the likelihood that, you know, you're waking up in the Bay Area getting ready for a Super Bowl and the Bills aren't there, and on the AFC side you're like, wait, what? They made it? This team made it? And, oh, they're getting 5.5, 6? In the game?
Yeah, like what? Like what
new characters are going to be on the biggest stage for the NFL.
Well, not only that, you could be waking up with a San Francisco home game. You could be waking up with that, which no one would have expected that, though, since week one, basically.
What's the number, San Fran, Jaguars?
Remember, Jacksonville went there and beat them earlier this year before we knew how good Jacksonville was. I'd make San Francisco barely a field goal, probably 2.5.
Oh, really?
I got too
aggressive. If it's the Rams, are we looking at a 5.5, 6-point spread against a non-Bills AFC
Super Bowl contender? Probably 5 would be my guess. Especially, I mean, the Rams just pummeled them in London. Jacksonville, they pummeled them in London.
So the biggest, so long, though. I'm sorry to cut you off. The biggest upset in the AFC, I guess, would be...
It's still Houston.
Making it to the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
No, I mean, the longest odds...
Oh, sorry.
I meant the biggest upset would be discounted
Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Sorry. Forgot about
your
Steelers.
They're just about in. 40-1 right now to win the Super Bowl. A-Rodge.
Not happening.
Wouldn't that be glorious? It wouldn't be that glorious.
No, it would not be good for us,
all
Cofield.
All these puke Steeler fans actually would get a nice reward, and then they'd piss and moan that the Steelers get blown out in the Super Bowl. Can you imagine if this was the year that Mike Tomlin made it back?
That would be pretty. And Harbaugh sitting at home with no playoff berth. And Andy Reid's at home with no playoff berth. Crazy.
All right, we'll get back into the news of the day. Max Crosby, sounds like he was irked today and left the facility because they want to shut him down. UNLV looks like it's going to lose its starting quarterback in Anthony Calandria. And I do want to build on that whole, what do we do to stop this tanking? There's got to be something creative here. While I understand what's happening and teams should be doing it, they should be shutting down guys and not making them available to play in key spots when they need to lose, it is a troubling deal and trend for the NFL.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, at that point in the show, we bring in NFL insider Mark McMillan, who's out of town in Arizona. He's up with Parles and Cofield. Mark, what's up, buddy?
What's going on, man? Out here in sunny Arizona. Well, it's a little gloomy today, but that didn't stop us from bidding on the griddle, man. I got my son a nice little griddle, and he made hibachi steak and shrimp tonight with fried rice.
Wait, he did or you did?
He did. I got the video. I got proof. I got proof, man. He's stepping his game up.
Look at this. Chip off the old block. Chef Mark is with us. What did you guys do for Christmas?
What did I do for Christmas? Oh, I had some. I did a tri-tip. I did some ribs. We did macaroni and cheese. We did collard greens, peach cobbler.
Oh, that's all?
Cornbread. It was something light, man. You know, our grandkids came over. We got three granddaughters. So, and then our daughter just dropped the ball on us today. She's having the fourth. So, we're going to have four grandchildren. So, that's what we did, man.
Damn. Jeff was salivating.
I mean, the pictures you put on social looked incredible.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I got my own spices and sauce. Everybody know you can get that at GorillaMcMillan.com. And I did a dry rub on the ribs. I didn't spritz them. I just put them in my Gorilla Grill smoker. I smoked my tri-tip at 225 for 2 hours. And then I seared it on my my gas grill for like the last 5 minutes to get that nice char on it. And it came out medium rare, 135, 140s. Came out real nice.
Mark McMillan's with us. Where are you? Where are you? You look like you're a line cook here. You're making birria nachos in Zona. What's going on there?
Yeah, I'm going to partner up with this place called the Taco Spot here in Arizona, and they want to use my barbecue sauce. So we're going to come up with some. You know, back in the day, we were called the Bird Gang in Philly. That was our defense, Gang Green Bird Gang. So we're going to come up with Bird Gang nachos using my barbecue sauce. So we have the birria, we have the cheese. We have the barbecue sauce. We're doing barbecue birria nachos, man. So I'm excited about that. When I come back, I got to do the official launch of it. So they're going to be doing that for the whole month of January and leading up to the Super Bowl.
Go up to Mark McMillan 29 on Twitter. You can see all these videos we're talking about. I'm watching on loop the cheese pour. I'm like, oh, Lord, I need some nachos tonight. Just watching the cheese get poured on.
You know, that was my first time getting actually on a griddle, man. Sometimes I get nervous, and, you know, the young ladies in the kitchen, you know, man, they're handling tortillas with their bare hands. That griddle's probably like 400 degrees. And I'm like, man, I might burn my hands up. And the ladies were looking at me like, you wimp. And so I was like, man, I got to go in. So I just started, you know, going at it. And the cheese at the end, man, that was the money shot. And then we put a little cilantro, a little jalapenos on top. And I was actually serving people in the restaurant. So people were like, who is this guy that you got working? And the guy finally told them, you know, that I played football. So everybody's like, wow, he's pretty good. So I might have a job at the Taco Spot, man.
There you go. Yeah. Always spreading yourself out there just in case, right? Mark McMillan's with us. All right, Mark, you got to get in on this conversation. I understand tanking, but I also understand it from the other side. At the end of the season, players want to play, and Max Crosby apparently got annoyed with the Raiders today. They told him he was going to get shut down. He left the facility. I don't think he should leave the facility. I think he should just keep it quiet, you know, be a good soldier. But I also understand it from his side. As a guy who played the game, what is it like at the end of the season when, in this era, when, you know, it's pretty open and clear, you're playing for draft selection spots. What are you supposed to do as a veteran player?
You got to finish it out. You know, you want to finish it out. You started that journey. Obviously, you know, with Max, you got to look at it as from a business standpoint. Maybe they don't want Max to go out and get hurt, and maybe in the offseason, if they were thinking about doing some trading or anything, they don't want that to jeopardize it. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can look at this at, but we all know, man, from Max, he wants to play no matter what. This guy's the ultimate football player. He's the ultimate Raider, and, you know, for him to not be on the side, I guarantee he's not going to be on that sideline being cool. I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, goes in at halftime and suits up and comes back out, you know, seeing his guys go to war. This guy's on billboards. He is the face of the organization. And for a coach to say, hey, man, we're going to shut you down for a player like that, I can only imagine how pissed off he is. And I would be pissed off, too, if a coach told some of our guys to shut it down. We were on the Saints team with me, Eric Allen. You know, we had Anthony Newman. We had some really good players. Mario Bates, Michael Bates, and, you know, we just finished the season. And, you know, it just sucks because I saw the news come out. I was like, well, shoot, who the heck are we going to look at on Sunday? Like, Brock Bowers is shut down. They might as well shut down Ginty, too. If you're going to shut down Max, shut down Ginty, too, if you're worried about guys getting hurt.
Yeah, I have no idea whether or not playing whatever quarterback they need to play, whoever it is. You can say who the worst quarterback is. I guess you can pick with the three backups, including Cam Miller on the practice squad, but it's going to be such a weird game, too. How do you think it's going to unfold with the Giants and Raiders?
You know what? Jackson Dart, he's going to go out there and try to win. You know, he's getting reps because he is the guy. They know he's the guy. He's going to go out there and get reps. I guarantee that the D-linemen, the linebackers that the Giants have, they have a decent defense. those guys are going to be going after it. You know, they're going to get after it. You don't fly from New York all the way to Vegas and just tank it. You know, on the Raiders side of the ball, you're just looking at – it's almost like a practice squad. You know, you got guys coming in from – you might as well throw Aiden O'Connell out there. Why not? You know, give him an opportunity to showcase what he can do, because we know he's not going to be part – he's not part of the plans for the Raiders. So give this guy an opportunity to get some film, and maybe they can do something with him in the offseason. So it is going to be – I might end up driving back to Arizona at halftime, you know, for this game. But it's going to be bad. I know Howard Cross. He works for the Giants. He played when I played. He's an Alabama guy. Jeff Armstead, he was a linebacker out of Miami. We came in together. I think he's going to be in town. So I might just go down there and just check out the Giants coaching staff and some of my boys and then just leave. I don't know, man. So I don't – Steve, maybe you can come in on Sunday morning to do Raiders pregame live with us.
Right. These are such weird times, too. Again, building on this, like with the Chiefs yesterday, the Chiefs to close out the season, Mahomes goes down and they're like, hey, we're good. We're good with six wins. Let's get the hell out of here. It's just, I said it earlier, it's just antithetical to competing all year. And then, as you know, as soon as it's obvious that you can't make the playoffs, you just pull the plug. I just wonder what it's like inside locker rooms.
I can imagine, like I said, I've been on some, you know, thank God I was on some really good teams. And like I said, the Saints was the only team that we wasn't really good, but our morale was still high. We still wanted to go out there and compete because, you know, your job is on the line. And, you know, good thing I didn't tank it, you know, else I wouldn't have got signed up by the Chiefs when the Saints released me after my first year. And that was one thing that Marty and Lamar Hunt came in and said when I came down and sat down. They was like, hey, we watched the film in New Orleans. And one thing about watching you and Eric and Greg Jackson, you guys still competed at a high level. And we want guys like that as part of our organization. So that helped me out a lot, because I could have just been like, man, I'm going to be out of here. Dicker doesn't like me. I know I'm going to be gone. But I was like, man, I got to put good stuff on film, you know, when I get released, that other teams will look at and see that I'm still fighting.
All right. Now, college football has got its own set of issues. That didn't look like the same UNLV team that we saw all year on Tuesday in that bowl game. And now we find out Anthony Calandria. You know, even though last week he said, hey, I don't want to go in the portal, now Anthony Calandria, the quarterback for the Rebels, is going into the portal.
Yeah, and Steve, you know, I'm a big fan of that young man, and I was excited when they said he was going to come out. But now, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt with the NIL. Same with these college coaches. Hey, I'm going to be here, and then next thing you know, they're leaving. You know, so it's tough, but obviously, I guess they said $200,000. I guess it wasn't enough, but he's an electric player. You know, like I said, I know that people are going to throw a lot of money at this young man. He's a winner. But he definitely played probably one of his worst games since he's been at UNLV. And now you're going to think like, okay, was he 1 foot in and 1 foot out? Because he didn't play like the old quarterback that we saw all season.
Yeah, a disappointing performance. You know, that said, I think Dan Mullen understands more than – you know, most coaches that have that many years under their belt, that this is the way it is. I don't think he's going to be unprepared in terms of going into the portal and trying to rebuild in the portal again.
Oh, no, there's going to be quarterbacks. If I'm a quarterback and I'm under Dan Mullins, I'm a coach, I'll play for you. And if that's going to be 1 year, now all of a sudden Boise State is out of the Mountain West, so you have an easier path to win the Mountain West. Dan Mullins is not going to have a problem of finding a quarterback. Because as you see, that offense puts up, you know, 25, 30 points a game. He's going to get a lot of transfers just the way it is. There's some quarterback that's sitting behind somebody at one of these Power Four schools that could come in 1 year and revitalize his career and go get paid. That's just the way it is.
Hey, Mark, enjoy the rest of the trip in Arizona, and we'll see you soon. I appreciate you calling in. Thanks for being flexible today.
All right, appreciate it, fellas. Roll Tide.
There he is, Mark McMillan. We'll talk more about the Tide next week as Alabama, of course, in the CFP quarters, the Elite Eight, taking on Indiana, getting a touchdown, 6.5. Yeah, it's weird, man. These are weird times. And I've been kind of rolling with the punches, but today it's hitting me. I'm like, man, it's too strange. Just seeing you know, clubs pull the plug. That Chiefs thing is just goofy. Like, doesn't that feel like – can you come to grips with, hey, this is the way it is at the end of the season for the final three or four games. We're not good. Our quarterback is down. We're not going to, you know, make our best effort from an organization standpoint to win. And then also not say that there's a changing of the guard. Like, something's going to be different next year with Kansas City. We know Mahomes probably won't be back for the beginning of the year. Does this feel like this is a major overhaul, especially with Kelce probably done as well?
It has to be at least some overhaul.
Like, I feel like I'm a prisoner of the moment.
Yeah, I think
and
it
it's
has,
just like, don't worry about it. It's just these four games. It'll be back to normal. Not that I'm rooting for the Chiefs, trust me.
Look, for Kansas City, it'll be close enough to normal because assuming Mahomes doesn't fall off a cliff, which there's no reason to think he will with how advanced everything is ACL surgery-wise, I think they'll be fine. They may just not be as good next year, but if they make the playoffs next year, it'll just make them scary as a wild card as opposed to winning the West. And, I mean, based off the way that everyone was acting at the end of last night's game, I think that's it for Kelce. I think this final game is at Allegiant next week, and that's that.
We got Chuck Esposito coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll go behind the counter. We'll get the sportsbook side of things for Week 17 and all these bowl games. But on the way back, boy, we're in the business of hot take, hot shots. If I saw one more case of people talking about the Thunder, I think we talked about it on this show, winning 75 games. Like, wow, did that come crumbling down? They're going to win a lot, but it ain't going to be 75.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, rolling on. Boy, social media has made our job so easy. I got a couple of football stories with relation to UNLV. That's coming up in about 30 minutes, so you got to stick around. I'm not going to do it right now. Tease. A little tease. But, I mean, literally, the Twitter machine opens up, and I'm like, okay, we got something there. We got something there. NBA. What do you think? 76-6, 75-7. How's that over 72.5 win total looking? Or was it 73?
Oh, it'd have to be 73.5.
It was 73.5.
It's not great right now.
Yeah, for the Thunder, check that. For the Thunder. About a week ago, as we were getting ready for the NBA Cup, folks were like, man, who's going to beat this team? They're motivated. SGA is going to play every game. And then all of a sudden we find out they get a little matchup problem with the Spurs.
I've only lost since I actually overshot it on the rundown, Cofield, since December 13th. Not even 2 weeks. They're 0-3 against the Spurs, and they got waxed pretty good on their home floor yesterday on Christmas by the San Antonio Spurs. And, you know, it got me thinking. And, again, me trying to project the NBA is as laughably bad as me trying to project anything else, period. But it kind of feels like that San Antonio has already proven they can beat them. Now let's see it in the high, in the super high leverage games if they get in the 7-game series.
Please the don't do this.
The Nuggets have the best player on planet Earth.
Please don't do this.
And Houston has always presented matchup problems with the way the roster is constructed. I'm not saying Oklahoma City's not going to repeat. They still should be the favorites and still probably will repeat if they get the one seed. But all of a sudden, it doesn't look like a slam dunk, no pun intended, that they're even going to get out of the West because there are three really darn good teams that they might have to see two of them in route to even make the finals.
Yeah, I'd bet the no on repeating. I think it's impossible to repeat now. Injuries are one thing. So are they going to be peaking? Is everyone going to be good to go in the postseason? And like you said, the West has good depth, and it actually has good depth beyond the teams that you just mentioned. And while I think you had a handicapping note to suggest that, well, if they make it out of the West, then they should. No one's going to beat them from the East, but it's how they make it out of the West.
Sure, of course.
And then how whoever makes it out of the East is sitting as they get to the finals. Like, are they fresh as a daisy? That's a stupid statement, but whatever. I don't know why I use that. That's a freaking 80-year-old statement. Fresh as a daisy.
I did just look at the top of the East, though. Like, like Detroit, like you kind of like, we talked about this a few weeks ago. Like you kind of have to wait your turn in order to make the finals. Like everything's pointing to the Knicks making the finals at this point. But again, it's still the Knicks, so we'll see. I mean, Detroit has the best record. Boston is somehow the 3 seed without Tatum, and if they get Tatum back, all right, maybe their fun hating Joe Mazzulla head coach can push them through at this point, Cofield. But we'll see. It's just the lack of depth in the – I mean, none of these teams – like Toronto? Toronto's the 4 seed in the East right now. Come on, give me a break.
I know, but we were just saying during a break, a couple breaks back, just to get your preview of what we were discussing. I was asking you, as I was watching the Hawks here on one of the big screens at Golden Circle Sports Bar, I'm like, why are the Hawks not better? And you, what did you say? Something like,
I gave you basically the shrug emoji.
All right, right. It's like, but then I thought about it. I'm like, it's such a long season.
Yeah.
Why get that worked up over, you know, 31 game result? And my point on the Hawks was, look at this roster and how many guys have improved a whole lot, and they're super young. And maybe they have one of those stretch runs where they, you know, the last 50 whatever games, 51 games, they go 31-20, right? And
wouldn't shock me.
And they emerge.
Yeah,
there's so many of these teams in the NBA where there are still dudes who are like, okay, this guy's been in the league for 5 years. Now he finally broke through. Yeah, he's 23.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't old.
Well, in Cleveland, 17 and 15 through 32 games, you would imagine at some point they'll go on some sort of spurt.
You would imagine. You would think. After last year's regular season, some anger after the postseason, you would think. We go behind the counter next, get week 17 angles. What the hell's happening on the betting front? Which I don't know why I said, what the hell's happening? It's also confusing. Chuck Esposito, STN, is going to be up with Parles and Cofield.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Good night of sports going down here on the 55-plus TVs at the Golden Circle Sports Bar. Rolling out dinner. Of course, you can come in for breakfast. That happens overnight. And then on Saturday and Sunday mornings, I'll be here tomorrow. Throw the flag show right here on ESPN Las Vegas. They've got great breakfast here, including the breakfast sandwich and the chicken chilaquiles. We got games to bet. We got NFL to bet. Tomorrow, two games. Sunday, relatively full slate. Seven bowl games tomorrow. Let's bring in Chuck Esposito from STN. What's going on, Chuck?
Oh, good, Steve. Happy holidays to you, all the listeners, and you know, ready to get back at it. It was kind of a weird Christmas with games that didn't really have that much impact. You had all three dogs on between Thanksgiving and Christmas, either win or cover, which is very uncharacteristic from our side of the counter. But ready to get back at it, as you mentioned, a lot of games in pro football and college football over the next couple of days.
Taking off the sportsbook boss hat, do you like NFL games on Christmas as a real human being?
I do. You know, I was home yesterday and with the family and had the games on while we were opening gifts and doing other things. But I'm fine with it. I've kind of, I guess, got accustomed to it now and enjoy having them on.
You didn't get the request from anyone like, Dad, you can't do sports every day of the year. Come on.
All I get is, who do I have to root for, Dad?
We want you in a good mood so we can have a fun Christmas.
Yep, very true.
There you go. There it is. We find out the real life of the bookmaker.
Yep.
Okay, let's
for
talk.
Sure.
Let's talk bowl games first before we get to Saturday and Sunday NFL. What has been the vibe in this bowl season in terms of the handle? Because I think a lot of bettors right now are kind of frustrated with, you know, opt-outs and transfers and motivation on one side and maybe not on the other. So how people bet these games?
Yeah, it's difficult for us, too, and you're right. It's a little bit different than, you know, what bowl games used to be. It's tough with what you just mentioned. There's a lot faster line movements that are going on. We still generate good handle on them, because in many cases they're isolated games, which people still want to have something to bet on. But it is a little bit different. As I mentioned, we're moving stuff a lot faster. The team is definitely, you know, tuned into everything on social with opt-outs and, you know, transfer portal and guys declaring and coaching changes. So it's a little bit tougher than it used to be, no question about it. But we know we've got the big playoff games coming up, and there are some good bowl games as well, but just not the same as it was in the past.
What's it looking like for Penn State and Clemson with Clemson 2.5?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good matchup. I think it's one of the better bowl games, to be honest with you. We opened Clemson 2. At the highest point, we were at Clemson 4.5, but we've started to see it come back down now. We sit at 2.5. Ticket count does favor Clemson at about 61% right now, guys.
BYU 3.5 against Georgia Tech in a 12:30 start in the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at this BYU team, and they're one of the teams that maybe should have been in the playoff, and I think due to that fact, we saw an initial push on that side. We opened the game 3 in favor of the Cougars. The highest point that it got was at 5. It started to come back down a little bit, but we're still seeing about 65% of the tickets on BYU. It looks like we will be Jacket fans tomorrow when this game kicks.
Little Maction, not both teams, but Miami of Ohio going against the soon-to-be Pac-12 Fresno State, and the Bulldogs are 6.
Again, here, kind of one-sided in favor of Fresno. We opened 3.5 up to 5.5 right now. So closer to 70% of the tickets are on Fresno in this one, so we'll definitely be Miami O fans.
Gator Bowl, two pretty high-level teams, had good seasons. Virginia just missed out on reaching the ultimate dream, and the Cavs are getting 3.5 against Mizzou in the Gator Bowl.
Not a lot of line movement here, guys. Ticket count just slightly favors Missouri at 54%, but sitting at 4 right now, total of 44. A little bit of action on the over, but not a ton right now.
How are people playing LSU and Houston? That one is a pick in H-Town at the Pro Football Stadium.
To me, another one of the more intriguing matchups with Kiffin going to LSU. We opened Houston 3. Initial push was on the Cougars, where it got up to 3.5. But since then, it's been a steady flow of LSU money, and we sit at 1 right now, and it's looking more and more, Steve, like it could go to pick by the time they kick tomorrow industry-wide.
Let's hit some Saturday games here with Chuck Esposito in the NFL. Chargers 1 against the Texans.
Kind of a big game for both teams, I think. You know, you look at these two teams, the Chargers still mathematically could be number 1 seed in the AFC. Number has ticked up just a bit. Opened the game at 1.5. It sits at 2 right now. It's a Texan team that didn't play great last week. They still struggle a bit offensively, but they've been on a bit of a roll. Kind of an intriguing matchup, but I think really big game for the Chargers, who still could maybe sneak into that number 1 seed in the AFC.
Backup bowl tomorrow night at Lambeau. Jordan Love's out. Lamar Jackson is out. It's 3.5 with Green Bay at home.
Yeah, I think for the Packers, they have to win. They still have to win out and maybe hope the Bears stub their toe in that last game or lose them to San Francisco on Sunday night or lose the last game against Detroit, and maybe they could still win the North. Game opened 2.5. We got as high as 5 when the news about Jackson came out, and there was a chance of Love, but now it's settled back in at 3.5, but it does look like it's Willis in this game, and kind of a big game for Baltimore, too. We know they finish against the Steelers, they're not a very good team right now. I think Baltimore's kind of one of the biggest disappointments in the league, and it's strange, guys, to talk about Week 17, and the Chiefs are already eliminated, the Lions are already eliminated, and the Ravens are on the brink of elimination. Kind of an upside-down year, especially over the second half of the season.
Chuck, going to Sunday, Carolina is still getting 7 against Seattle, and it looks like by looking at the STN app that you guys are minus 120 laying the 7 with the Seahawks right now.
Yeah, we are juiced a bit. The game did open 7.5. It sits at 7 minus 20 right now. Big game for Seattle. I think big game for both teams. We do know that Tampa and Carolina play week 18, so that might be ultimately to decide the South. Carolina's been a much better team at home. The Seattle team, probably one of the bigger surprises at 12-3. 64% of the tickets are on the Seahawks, guys.
Cleveland and Pittsburgh is an interesting one, Chuck, because we've already seen a little bit of movement this week. If Baltimore loses on Saturday night, the Steelers clinch the division without even hitting the field yet this week. It's 3 right now with the Steelers.
That's probably the reason the number has dropped. We opened at 4.5. There was an initial push on the Steelers to get us up to 5, but it sits at its lowest point right now at 3. I know there's no Metcalf in this game. The Browns have played a little bit better at home in spurts. They did beat Green Bay at home, but I'm kind of surprised the number did drop as much as it did. But understanding, again, if the Ravens lose, this game becomes kind of a moot point to the Steelers.
Chuck, New England laying the lumber with a chance to win the East, 13.5 in the Meadowlands against the Jets.
They're playing against a bad Jet team, guys, at 3-12. Brady Cook at quarterback again. We know the Patriots have some injuries, but I still think it's a big number. It's hard to lay that big number, but they're just so much better than what the Jets are right now.
Chuck Esposito up with Cofield and Company here on ESPN Reno, ESPN Las Vegas. Make sure you download the STN Sports app. If you're a new user, you can get up to a $50 no-worry wager. Giants and Raiders, where do you guys have the line? Because it's been all over the place. I mean, I have Giants 1.5 in front of me. What do you guys have?
That's where we're at right now. We were actually at the Raiders 1.5 or 2 over the last 48 hours. But no Bowers, now no Crosby. Definitely a bold to maybe see who's going to end up with the first pick in the draft. We think if it's the Raiders, you know, they need a quarterback. They at all indications are early on, they lean towards Mendoza. The Giants are in a great spot, though. They have their quarterback in Jackson Dart. If they happen to have the number one pick, they'll probably be able to get a haul for it. But early money clearly on the Raiders. Ticket count still favors the Raiders a bit, but the number has totally flipped, guys, from the Raiders 1.5 to the Giants 1.5. And that's a product, again, of no Bowers, no Crosby. What's the Raiders' psyche at this point? Is there a coaching change at the end of the season? Well, what ultimately happens? But not a good Raider team, and I think the Giants have been playing, although losing streak right now, much better than the Raiders have this year.
How about Colts plus 6 against Jags?
Hey, the Jags have been on a roll, guys. I mean, offensively, they look electric. Everything seems to have come together for Trevor Lawrence under Cohen. They've been playing really well. They're 11-4. 74% of the tickets are on the Jags. It's a Colts team that was 8-2 and had a 95% chance to make the playoffs. And we know that 8-7 right now, that is diminished. So it's a Jag team that my guess is we're going to need the Colts pretty good when they kick off on Sunday.
Hey, Chuck, in general, down the stretch here, when you get some of these weird games where teams are out of the playoffs or you got two teams that, you know, aren't very good and they're kind of playing more for draft slots, does handle drop overall, or are people just as enthusiastic even late in the season as they are at the beginning?
It does a bit, Steve, to be honest with you. I mean, there's still games that are meaningful that I think have the increased handle, but some of these meaningless games are more like an exhibition game as you see more and more players who aren't going to play due to an injury. So I think it changes kind of dramatically where our guests are really focusing on the games that mean something to one or both teams. I'm sure we'll have a huge handle on the Eagles, Bills, and Bears, Niners, and those will probably be the two biggest bet games of the day.
You know, I was trying to get Jeff on board on this one, and I'm not sure where this is going to go, but I really think this tanking stuff has gotten kind of out of control, and I really haven't been bothered by it, but this year it's really annoying me. I think the NFL's got to come up with some kind of competition at the end of the year to make teams at the bottom play and, like, play to win to get picks.
Yeah, I mean, it never had been an issue in the NFL before. I didn't think. I mean, I kind of like the traditional, if you were the worst team, you got the number one pick. But we'll see what ultimately happens. We know other leagues have gone to a different format in the past. But, you're the Raiders right now. Again, your two best players aren't playing in this game, and that's why the number has flipped because of that.
Bills are 1 against the Eagles. This game certainly means something.
It does, and the numbers come down. I mean, this is a game that we opened the Bills 3. It kind of hovered around 2, 2.5. It's at its lowest point right now at 1. 55% of the tickets are on the Bills. I think both teams want to go into the postseason and playing well. It's kind of strange to be talking about the Bills, and they very well may be a wild card team where they're not going to have that huge home field advantage and have to play 3 games in a row on the road to have an opportunity to get to the Super Bowl. But they may be playing on the road, and they may be a favorite in those games on the road, depending on how it shakes out in the AFC, guys.
Last one to hit with Chuck Esposito from STN with Parles and Cofield here on ESPN Las Vegas, ESPN Reno. Niners 3 over the Bears. What are you seeing on the game? And I also wanted to follow up with, have you taken some money on the Niners over the last couple of weeks or early? Did people try to jump on better numbers for futures?
Yeah, they did a little bit. We did see a little Niner money show. They're definitely banged up. We know that. This is a monster game for both teams. The Niners can control their own destiny. They'll be the number one seed. A bear win here, and they potentially still, if the Seahawks stub their toe, they potentially could still be the number one seed in the North. Game open 2.5. It's just at its highest point right now. 3 juiced. 61% of the tickets are on the Niners. Playing out west in San Francisco or Santa Clara has been a house of horrors for the Bears. I don't think they've won there since Mike Ditka put Fridge Perry in the backfield the year before the Bears got to the Super Bowl. So it's been a long time, the Bears winning out west in San Francisco.
Chuck, we appreciate it. You have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, guys. Sounds great. Happy holidays again, and look forward to chatting real soon.
There he is, Chuck Esposito. You know, it's funny. It just hit me. Remember hour one I was talking about playing the Niners under, right? That I thought it was going to be a disaster. And I remember looking up. I was like, wait, they're still 10.5? I'm playing the under. Now I remember. I actually did bet it.
Oh, no.
It's a very small bet. I was like, did I bet someone on that one? I think I'm in real trouble on that one. I'm already done. I'm already done. No, I actually did bet it. That's right. I did bet it. It was a very small bet. We come back, 5 o'clock hour on the way. Next hour, we're going to talk to Matt Rhule from Nebraska as they're playing in the Las Vegas Bowl on New Year's Eve right here in town.